from KQED.
Support for the California Report comes from the Wesley Foundation, recognizing young social entrepreneurs through the Wesley Prize for Young Innovators of California. Digital Foundry, working with leading organizations to jumpstart digital innovation. More online at digitalfoundry.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
Today on the California Report magazine, stories of young Latinos trying to hang on to the California dream.
I need my high school diploma. I need to get this out the way. It's like a big old stone that's just right there. I need to move it.
It definitely is a scary thought to think about that. There's $45,000 in debt that I have to get over before I can really take on the rest of life.
You know, transportation does have a lot to do with the opportunity that you're afforded. It kind of limits you. Like, can I get to the next stop? Can I get to the next goal in my life?
Latinos make up the majority of California's youth, so we're focusing on their challenges because their future helps shape the future of the state. Our show today is part of our collaboration with NPR called A Nation Engaged, exploring how to unlock economic opportunity for more Americans. I'm Sasha Coca, and this is the California Report magazine. We start our show today at Desert Mirage High School in the eastern Coachella Valley. Think acres of date palms and dusty desert on the edge of the Salton Sea. We're walking to a crowded bus stop with Rosa Mendez.
I usually just go by Rosie. I'm 16. I'm a junior. I'm going to Mecca, to the library, to the public library, because I don't have internet access in my house. So it's kind of like annoying having to go there every week just to be able to do my homework.
The school library closes early, so the bus ride to the public library is her only choice. Rosie's the daughter of farm workers, and many families here rely on the bus to get groceries, go to doctor's appointments, get to school. Sometimes that means walking for a mile or two along a dirt road to a bus stop that's just a stick in the sand. No bench, no shade, to protect them from the desert heat.
I'm just gonna go and like stand next to that one tree.
Cause there's shade?
Yes. So I usually just like stand right there.
Rosie, if you miss this bus, what happens?
I have to wait for the next bus. If I don't catch this one, I would have to wait for the 3 o'clock bus.
So that's like an hour and a half from now, you'd have to wait.
Yeah, but it's kinda less time for me to be able to do my work.
Something as simple as getting where you need to go can help shape your future, especially if you're young, Latino, and low-income. Like Rosie. She's an arty, shy kid, but confident in who she is.
My gender pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm bisexual.
She's wearing a t-shirt encouraging young people to vote, even though she's too young to cast a ballot herself. She's a disciplined student, focused. She wants to be an engineer.
I just want to do like engineering because I know that, in at least in my culture, women don't really do that type of stuff. So I just want to like break that barrier and do it myself.
We'll come back to the bus stop and Rosie's story in a bit. On today's show, we'll be hearing from a lot of young Latinos in California who have dreams like Rosie, but who have to struggle to reach them. Like Emiliano Villa. He's from Oakland, and his story shows how even within some families, there can be economic disparities. Emiliano's a reporter with Youth Radio, and he says growing up, things were very different for him than they were for his sister.
My sister, Azucena Racilla, is 16 years older than I am. But the difference between us goes way beyond years. Back when she was my age,
we were able to get a house. Each of us had our room. Our parents would always buy us like stuff for Christmas and our birthdays.
By the time I was old enough to remember things like birthday presents, the recession hit. My family's home renovation business took a nosedive, and it hasn't recovered. So, money-wise, my adolescence is completely different from my sister's.
They kind of had no choice but to sort of, like, scale down on the house. They had to move back to a smaller place. They had to go back to you guys sharing rooms. They had to cut back on expenses.
Back when my sister had an after-school job, she kept all the money for herself. I have to use my paycheck to help with groceries and rent.
Hola, hijo.
That's my mom, Gabriela Solorzano. She's much more comfortable speaking in Spanish.
Todo el negocio se fue para abajo.
My mom's saying after our family's business went under, we went from making $2,000 a week to $300 a week, if that. So unlike my sister, when I start college next year, I'll be on my own covering tuition.
This causes a lot of tension within families.
Dalton Conley is a sociology professor at Princeton University. He studies economic inequality within families, specifically between siblings.
The expectation, or at least the fairy tale we tell ourselves, is that inequality stops at the front doorstep, you know, when you wipe your feet on the welcome mat. But really, inequality starts at home.
Conley says when siblings end up with different economic situations at home, it can have a big impact later on.
That's going to be reflected in net worth differences. One of you has to contribute to your family of origin and the other did not. The other sibling gets a jump start on accumulating savings or, you know, for a down payment for a house.
That's pretty much what happened to Evie Layden. Her older sister was accepted into her dream school, Oberlin.
My father, who was a single parent, didn't feel like we really had we were in a financial position for her to go. And so she went to a much less expensive school for a year, which she didn't really like, and ended up dropping out. And then even though it was only 2 years later when I graduated, I think my father just felt a little more equipped to be able to send me to Brown University.
And that one difference between them has had lingering effects.
I definitely had that opportunity that she didn't have. And I know that she has more stresses in her life related to finances than I do.
Despite those stresses, in the big picture, Layden's experience lines up with the American dream. The idea that a family's finances improve over time. But according to a 2016 study from the Urban Institute, millennials are actually less likely than older generations to think they're better off than their parents.
Tenemos cuadros, bodegones que compré también.
My mom's describing the treasures in our antique hutch. Fine china, tea sets, wine glasses, and vases. I've grown up looking at this fancy tableware, which we can't afford anymore. But I don't resent my older sister or my parents. I'm too busy working hard to make sure someday we'll be able to afford that stuff again. For the California Report, I'm Emiliano Villa in Oakland.
The bus is finally here, and Rosie Mendez climbs on board.
Line 91 westbound to India. Please have exact fare ready before boarding the bus.
Remember, we're in the Eastern Coachella Valley, and Rosie's the teenager who has to take a slow-moving bus to the library to get online and do her homework. We meet up with a couple of young local reporters who hop on the bus, too.
You know, transportation does have a lot to do with the opportunity that you're afforded, and it kind of limits you. Like, can I get to the next stop? Can I get to the next goal in my life?
That's Carla Martinez. She's 17. And Brian Mendez, no relation to Rosie. He's 21.
Check.
They write and take pictures for a youth publication called Coachella Unincorporated. I pass my microphone over to Carla so she can take over the interview with Rosie.
So how does it feel to ride the bus like right after you had like a long day at school?
It's exhausting, especially because sometimes I gotta like go all the way over there and then I have to wait a couple more hours get home, eat, and then be able to do like all of my homework if I don't have time to finish it. And then I end up going to sleep around 10, 11, and then I had to wake up again at 5 to be able to catch the bus. It's just very stressful.
Suddenly, the bus stops.
It got too hot, the transmission, so they had to stop.
The transmission cools down and the bus starts back up. But then it has to stop again at a railroad crossing and then take a couple detours because of construction on the road, all delaying the bus, which takes 45 minutes to get to the library just 5 miles away. We meet lots of people riding the bus, a dad taking his little kids to the doctor, a grandmother with her grocery cart making a 4-hour round-trip journey just to go to the supermarket. Efraín González is sitting across from Rosie. He's heading to the Boys and Girls Club for a boxing class.
Right now I'm 16. Yeah.
And what are your plans right after you graduate?
Well, mostly it's to just work with my parents a little while to earn them, help them out a little. And then after that, I think about going to college. Right now they work at the field, so I go over there to work with them since it's minimum wage. So they need a little more people to help them out to get more money.
Like Efraín, Rosie says she wants to help her family out too, but she sees a degree in engineering as the best way to do that.
Stop requested.
That's why she's determined, taking this long trip to the library every day. Inside the quiet, air-conditioned library, Rosie finds a place to sit, takes out her ruler and pencil and the iPad she's borrowed from school. We wave goodbye silently and leave her to finish her homework. Generations of young people like Rosie have believed that a college degree is a way out of poverty, a way to get a piece of the California dream.
Inviting beaches, paradise for sportsmen, rendezvous for romance under sunny skies. This is the lure of the West along the golden shores of California.
That's a promotional film from the 1950s, and if you graduated high school during that time in California, you easily got into the college of your choice. A decade later, even if your family had no money, you could still attend a public university for free, or almost free, under a new law called the Master Plan for Higher Education. That college degree was your ticket to the middle class. But that's not so true anymore, especially if you're a low-income Latino student at the University of California. Our education reporter, Anna Tintakalis, wanted to find out, does higher education in California still lead to greater economic opportunity? She didn't have to go far to find her first interview.
It's almost dinner time at my house, and we have a visitor, Melissa Salcedo, my 18-year-old sister-in-law. She's a self-proclaimed nerd and a ferocious reader.
Everyone, like, needs something to escape into, and I saw this really great quote. If you don't see the book you want on your shelf, then write it.
Melissa is listening to music on her iPhone and scrolling through email as I get the food ready. Her journey as a college freshman at UC Irvine begins in just a few days.
What are some of the things you have to bring with you to college? Otherwise, you won't be able to survive.
My blanket. I've had it since I was a baby.
Melissa comes from a big Mexican-American family in San Diego. Her parents, my in-laws, have 6 kids. Melissa is the youngest and the first to get into a UC school. She plans to major in creative writing. Latino students like Melissa now make up more than 20% of the undergraduate population at UC. That's the most ever. And many of them come from low-income families. UC's Blue and Gold Opportunity Plan covers their roughly $13,000 tuition, as long as their families make less than $80,000 a year. Becky Salcedo, Melissa's mom and my mother-in-law, says she's extremely thankful. But the truth is, she says they're still struggling to pay mounting student fees.
Do you want to live in a dorm? Well, you got to pay a fee for the application. Orientation fee. Here's another fee for your housing. I mean, there's so many families out there that that'll break them. You can't send your child to school then.
Going to college in California wasn't always this stressful and expensive for low-income families. Let's rewind to 1960. California had just adopted the so-called Master Plan for Higher Education, a groundbreaking law that gave all California residents the chance to attend an excellent public university or college for next to nothing. Out-of-state students could also get in at an affordable price. And again, this hits close to home. My dad came to California from New Hampshire because of what he called this golden opportunity. So I called home to get some more insight.
Hello?
That's my mom. My dad passed away a few years ago. They met in Los Angeles in the 60s. My mom had just immigrated from Peru. And Dad, well, he had just graduated from Cal State LA.
He was very proud because he said, you know, education is not only the private school. You can have a tremendous education in schools protected by the state.
And by that, she means the state's public universities. My father graduated in 4 years with little debt. So did the vast majority of students, including UC Berkeley grads Terry Tarantino and Darlene Miller.
I only applied to two colleges, San Diego State and UC Berkeley. I just assumed I was going to get in.
I don't remember anything arduous about the application process. There was no competition. You just could get in.
It was like $750 a year tuition. Walked out of college without debt. I had a $1,000 loan, and that was it.
So what happened? For that, I turned to higher education policy expert Patrick Callen. He says lawmakers knew back in the 60s that this college promise was going to be really expensive. But at the time, states were flush with cash and wanted to take on ambitious civic projects.
It didn't mean that their budgets were easy then, but they had money available. And a lot of the things that the state does now didn't exist then.
Like capping property taxes under Proposition 13 and funding a massive correction system. Combine that with changing demographics, soaring housing prices, more student demand, and less state support for public universities, and you have overwhelmed colleges with young people drowning in debt. Callen says California's master plan for higher education just hasn't changed with the times.
It wasn't adaptable enough. We didn't have enough capacity in there to rethink how this system ought to work in a different kind of era.
And when it comes to low-income Latino students, even if they get free tuition, data show they're three times more likely to graduate with debt compared to higher-income students. Guillermo Rogel is living proof of that.
In this house, we have seven people total and five rooms. And we're occupying one of the garages as a room, so six rooms.
The 22-year-old UC Santa Cruz graduate takes us through his cramped house in Seattle, where he works for Washington State's university system. He's from Riverside, the first in his family to go to a public university. His tuition was covered for all 4 years. But even with that, Guillermo is now $45,000 in debt. He didn't tell his parents because they were dealing with their own struggles.
They were taking care of the baby brother. They were taking care of my sister. And so it was a problem that I really held on to because I thought that it would burden them as well.
He says expensive student housing, everyday costs like food and school supplies, forced him to rack up the debt. Guillermo will start paying off that student loan in about 2 months.
It definitely is a scary thought to think about that. There's $45,000 in debt that I have to get over before I can really take on the rest of life.
University officials insist students like Guillermo are way better off than they would be if they didn't get a big tuition break, and that their college degree from UC will pay huge dividends later on in life as they move forward. And as my family and I sit down for dinner, my mother-in-law, Becky Salcedo, says that's what she's betting on as her daughter, Melissa, heads off to UC Irvine.
Melissa knows, you know, we would do whatever we can to help her go through this because this is what she wants and we're going to do whatever we can. But yes, you know, dollar signs are going through your heads. You're thinking about what else is coming our way, you know, but now it's time for us to figure it out.
but she wonders if she and her family can make this sacrifice for the next 4 years and beyond. For the California Report, I'm Anna Tentakulis. And now we make one last stop in the eastern Coachella Valley. We already met Rosie, a teenager who has to take a very slow bus so she can use the internet at the public library. Now we're headed to a neighborhood meeting in North Shore, a remote cluster of houses on the Salton Sea.
Yo sí uso el bus todos los días.
The bus comes only once every 3 hours here. Neighbors like Conchita Posad are worried about their kids having to wait for the bus when it gets up to 120 degrees here in the summer.
It's so hot, and if you have kids that are 2 or 3 years old or newborns that you have to take to the doctor, they're waiting out there in the heat. It just doesn't seem fair. Some people here pay $30 or $40 to get a ride in a car instead of waiting for the bus. People here can't afford that. There should be shade and benches to sit on.
Some folks at this meeting are proposing a solution, drilling together a makeshift shelter from scraps of wood and mesh screens, an inexpensive shade structure to make it easier to wait for the bus. It's a simple idea, nothing revolutionary. These shelters could just make it a little bit easier for young people living in this community to get where they need to go. Maybe even get one step closer to their dreams. Our last story takes us to Fresno, where they're trying out a different kind of solution to address obstacles for people living in poverty.
I kind of like just got stuck. I mean, I have a job, but I want to do better. What I feel is like stopping me is a high school diploma to get a career, not just a job.
That's Guadalupe Beltran, a young mom who's getting help from a government agency that usually deals with cattle and crops. Our Central Valley reporter, Vanessa Rancaño, brings us her story.
5 years ago, Guadalupe Beltran had just had her second child. She was a single mom in her early 20s, hadn't finished high school, and was on welfare. One day, she walked into a deli and pizza place and bought some subs with her food stamps. Then, on a whim,
I simply asked them if they were hiring, and they called me back for an interview the same day.
Just like that, she had a job.
What can I get started for you?
Can I get a large pepperoni pizza? With
Guadalupe, she goes by Lupe, still has that job.
I've been here for so long. I can make a sub within like 20 seconds. I can make a pizza within 30 seconds.
While she works behind the counter, Lupe tells me she never really liked school.
I just was on the wrong path as a high school student. Just getting into trouble. Hung around the wrong people. My mom wanted me to finish so bad. I didn't understand where she was coming from till now.
Lupe makes $11 an hour. She's not on welfare anymore, but she still depends on food stamps to get by. The number of people on welfare and food stamps spiked when the economy tanked. Now that number is dropping, but more people with jobs are getting food stamps. Lupe says where she works, it's the rare customer who doesn't pay for a meal with food stamps.
Right now it's slow because it's the ending of the month. In the beginning of the month, we have lines out the door.
Ever since spending on food stamps went up during the recession, some lawmakers have been pushing to cut it back. 2 years ago, the House tried to cut $40 billion from the program. One part of the compromise lawmakers came up with was to put the USDA in charge of testing out new programs that get people working or get them higher paying jobs. That's something Lupe's wanted for years. She dreamed of becoming a nurse, but it seemed impossible. Then, out of nowhere, a couple months ago, she got a call from a woman named Jessica Yang.
She was super excited on the phone. She was like, oh yeah, like I've always wanted to get my GED.
I don't know how she got my name. I'm just thankful she got it.
Yang works for Fresno Bridge Academy. It was one of just 10 job programs across the country that got that special USDA funding to reach out to people on food stamps. Yang will work with Lupe for a year and a half. First, she'll help her prep for the GED.
And when she seen me, she's like, oh my gosh, you're gonna get it. And I'm like, I didn't even have that much confidence in myself, but to hear it from you, you know, you make me feel like I got this.
She's also taking a class that helps with resume and interview skills.
I'm nervous right now. I don't know what I'm gonna say.
It's Lupe's turn with the local businesswoman who's volunteered to give interviews.
So have you looked into any education or training?
That's the thing. That's why I'm doing the workshops right now, is because they're helping me get my GED so I can start my career.
Awesome. It's better to start somewhere, isn't it? That's great. What are your biggest strengths?
I'm bilingual, and I am very trustworthy, and I'm responsible.
The businesswoman gives some general advice, then looks down at Lupe's torn jeans.
And just in the future, when you do go into interviews, I would just recommend, make sure you don't wear holy pants.
I know, I didn't have anything to wear.
Appearance is really important.
Once she passes the GED, Lupe wants to get into a certified nursing assistant program. Fresno Bridge Academy will help her apply for financial aid and pay for her textbooks and uniforms. So far, the program has been successful. After a year and a half, 80% of students either find jobs or get higher-paying jobs. Guadalupe Beltran knows firsthand what's at stake. After 15 years working the same low-wage job, her mother got fired.
They let her go like that, and she didn't have a high school diploma, and there she was stuck. And when I seen that, it opened my eyes. I was like, I need my high school diploma. So I'm like, I need to get this out the way. It's like a big old stone that's just right there. I need to move it.
And at least now, she's got some help. For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Rancagno in Fresno.
Special thanks to Lupe Beltran, Melissa Salcedo, Rosie Mendez, Efraín González, Guillermo Rogel, Emiliano Villa, and all the young people who shared their stories and their dreams with us. This has been a special edition of the California Report magazine, focused on unlocking opportunity for Latino youth. And that's our show, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. We had production help this week from the amazing team at Coachella Unincorporated, Amber Amaya, Brian Mendez, and Carla Martinez.
We met people who, like, no matter what time they have to wake up, no matter what sacrifices they have to make, they're going to get that bus and they're going to go where they need to go. Nothing's impossible. The impossible doesn't exist even for people here who are low on resources.
Our director is Susie Racho. The technical producer is Seal Muller, with additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Our online producer is David Marks. Our interns are Eli Wertschafter and Lacey Jane Roberts. Our senior editor is Victoria Maulion, and our editorial team includes Ingrid Becker, Ethan Lindsay, and Holly Kernan. I'm Sasha Coca. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report magazine.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.